Public Health will come to order. Secretary, please take the roll.
Today is Friday, February 17th, 2023. Vice Chair Lenz.
Here.
Senator Beard.
Here.
Senator Glimm.
Here.
Senator Gross.
Excused.
Senator Heinbaugh.
Here.
Vice Chair Kelker.
Excused.
Senator Molnar.
Here.
Senator Weber.
Here.
Chair McGilvery.
Here.
Thank you.
Just a few reminders here. If you have a cell phone today, please silence it or turn it off. If you are here to testify as a proponent or an opponent or an informational witness on any bill, please sign the register in the back of the room. Also, just a reminder that all the mics are live and we are being recorded. So with that, we will open the hearing today on Senate Bill 296. Senator Beard.
Thank you, Chair McGilvray and members of the committee. My name is Becky Beard, Senate District 40, parts of Powell and Lewis and Clark counties. I'm here today to introduce Senate Bill 296, creating the Senior Care Facility Access and Stabilization Act. This bill will revise funding laws related to skilled nursing and assisted living facilities, establish procedures for calculating room and board for assisted living residents, and require money appropriated for nursing home services to be used only for those purposes. We hear about closure after closure of these facilities and the stories about what residents and their families went through in the aftermath of these closures. We are left to conclude that our most vulnerable elderly citizens are now among the most invisible Montanans. It's like a tale of two cities. Our citizens experiencing this on the ground are in turmoil and left with few options. The other tale is that these citizens and their families prefer to keep their loved ones at home, that it's the new trend. Of course, we would prefer to keep them at home. But do you realize that fewer and fewer families are able and equipped with home environments to take care of this monumental task like this? Many Montanans need more specialized, intensified, and professional services. The intent is that the legislature affirm the importance of providing our most vulnerable older Montanans with quality residential long-term care services that are provided close to home and families and friends. These people have served their communities, been our teachers, our soldiers, our ranchers and farmers, our grocers, our moms and dads, they are our loved ones. This should rank as high a priority for our state services for these citizens who have given so much. Mr. Chair, I'll close after hearing from proponents, opponents, and informational witnesses. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Beard. Do we have proponents for Senate Bill 296 in the room?
Mr. Chairman, I have a handout.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rose Hughes, H-U-G-H-E-S. I'm the Executive Director of the Montana Healthcare Association. We represent nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and in-home care agencies around the state of Montana. We're here to support Senate Bill 296. This bill is brought to you to deal with some of the systemic problems that are long-term care facilities face. This is not, you know, House Bill 2, the money bill to get the rates up. It's rather to deal with systemic issues that we probably should have brought before you years ago. We do think that if we solve these systemic problems, we will be in a position to continue to help stabilize these long-term care facilities and also improve access to the services for the people who need them. So Senate Bill 296 does five things. First, it sets standards for how Medicaid rates get set for nursing homes and assisted living facilities. And they're basic and reasonable standards, such as you must consider the cost of providing the services, you must consider inflation, quality and safety standards, those types of things. It creates a framework saying how the legislature would like to see these rates set. What kinds of things would you like to be looked at? The second thing the bill does is provide for inflation adjustments. These are annual adjustments. For nursing homes, it uses the Global Insights Skilled Nursing Facility Market Basket to determine what that inflation factor is. That's a national, well-established, well-respected standard. And for the assisted living facilities, it uses the CPI because there isn't a specific market basket for that service. It also provides a cost analysis every 4 years with the thought that rates, if they fall behind, or quite honestly, if they fall ahead, can be adjusted, and that you'll have information that you need to decide how to adjust that. It does not require that rates be rebased every 4 years, just that you take a look at it. We just spent somewhere between $2 and $3 million on Medicaid provider rate studies to figure out what the costs of these services are and what the rates should look like. If we don't do something to have a regular inflationary factor and to have a regular look at these costs, it won't be that many years before we'll be right back where we started, and we'll be doing some major adjustments instead of taking care of things as we go along. The third thing is that we're asking that you put a fence around nursing home appropriations. And basically that just means that when you provide appropriation authority to meet nursing home needs, that in fact that money gets spent for that purpose. It provides that if the caseload is down, and that allows there to be some money that they have authority for, they have the ability to increase rates if in fact there's a gap between rates and costs, and also to provide workforce incentives or quality incentives or do some other appropriate things to help stabilize these facilities and provide good care. If the money isn't spent, it reverts to the general fund. If there's money left there, it goes back to the general fund but can't be moved around the department. In fiscal year 2022, the nursing home budget was underspent by $29 million, and those dollars were spread around to other services where the department thought they were needed. We thought they were needed in the nursing home budget as these nursing homes were closing, but they did get moved around. If this provision had been in place, that money would have been available to help stabilize some of these facilities and probably avert at least some of the closures that took place. The fourth thing in this bill is assisted living room and board and personal needs allowance, and I'm feeling like this is a little bit in the weeds, but the short story is that when Medicaid pays for assisted living, they pay for the services but not room and board, but the department sets room and board. So room and board is designed to cover the cost of the building or the rent, food, the non-medical sorts of things. The room and board rate for assisted living facilities has been $545 a month since 2009. The formula that's in this bill would allow that room and board rate to be increased and to see regular increases as Social Security is raised in January of each year. So if there's a 4% increase in Social Security, you're going to see an increase in that, the room and board allowance. It just makes sense to keep that up to date because it is, in effect, part of the assisted living rate. And there's a lot of trouble with access to assisted living services. We think this will improve access. We are also supporting an amendment that would make sure that the personal needs allowance for the individual also increases each year with that Social Security allowance so that it doesn't stay stuck at one amount indefinitely. This is not general fund money. This is not a cost to the state. This has to do with what the resident pays and how that intertwines. And the last thing is community first choice, and we're simply asking that assisted living become part of the community first choice option. The things that that will do is it will allow, instead of having our seniors on a waiting list to get assisted living services, if they are eligible, they will get the service under community first choice. That's a really good thing for all involved, because it's well known that if someone needs a service, if a senior is at a point where they need a service and they don't get it quickly, there's a good chance that their condition deteriorates and that they then need a higher level of care. In this case, if they're already looking at assisted living, that higher level of care would be that they would go to a nursing home. And so the object is to get them the service at the level of care they need when they need it. Also, there's a savings to the state. Community First Choice has a 6% federal match that is higher than the match for the waiver. So when the state makes this move, it saves 6% on those individuals. Our calculations indicate that we could serve the waiting list with the savings, so that those people wouldn't be waiting and it still wouldn't cost additional funding from the state. Those are the five things that are in the bill. Happy to answer any questions later if you have them, and I appreciate the opportunity and urge you to support this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Hughes. Further proponents?
Good afternoon, Senator McGilvery, members of the committee. My name is David Trost, T-R-O-S-T, and I stand here as a proponent of this bill. I am the CEO of St. John's United in Billings, Montana, and I have been in administrative roles at St. John's for 28 years. In that time, I've seen significant increase in the gap between cost and reimbursement, and this particular bill stands to correct, an effort to make sure that the reimbursement is at least at cost for serving Medicaid residents. When that happens, I hypothesize that we will see a return of providers wanting to provide nursing home services and increasing the access to those services. Not only that, I believe that the competition will drive the quality of those services up as well. If the underlying costs are cared for, those that are paying self-pay can help drive the improvements in services beyond cost. And so by enacting this bill, and if the spirit of this bill is followed by the department and costs are truly evaluated and truly reimbursed, we'll see a thriving and long-term care, retirement communities providing excellent care because the underlying costs are covered. That's it. Have a good day.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. I request permission to submit a handout.
Go ahead.
The handout is a signed letter from the Valley County Commissioners, also a huge proponent for SB 296. My name is Wes Thompson, T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N. I am honored to be the administrator for Valley View Home, located in Glasgow, Montana. We are the only nursing home in Valley County, and we are also supporting Phillips County as they no longer have a nursing home due to their recent closure. I am also a huge supporter of Senate Bill 296 presented from Senator Beard, because having the ability to analyze the actual cost for care for our elderly mothers, fathers, and grandparents means a lot in order to keep skilled nursing facilities afloat. The $2 to $3 million Guidehouse Medicaid rate study that was recently published back in November 30th of last year provided their recommended rates, but 3 weeks ago during HB2 subcommittee meeting, the very simple question to the Guidehouse study consultant firm was, we see your recommended rate, but what is the actual cost per resident per day? It was an interesting coincidence that they, for some reason, did not have the ability to provide that simple information. I had a much better speech I was going to provide today, but yesterday afternoon I received word that there was a new proposed amount for Medicaid that was provided, and it was still nowhere close to what we need in order to survive. Nowhere close to it. There's going to be more nursing home closures between now and if this bill is passed in 2 years. You're going to see more nursing home closures. You're going to see more articles, even in the national news, like McKnight's Magazine and so forth, that the state of Montana is failing their elderly population. There's no way around that at this point, ladies and gentlemen. What you can do is push Senate Bill 296 and get that ramped up so that by 2025 we can actually get better analytic data from our own people. With that, doesn't take $2 to $3 million to get numbers that are only recommended from a budget that was provided to them. I thank you all very much for your time.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee. For the record, I am Joette Woods, J-O-E-T-T-E-W-O-O-D-S. I am a Liberty County Commissioner. I am also serving as second vice president on behalf of the Montana Association of Counties. I stand before you today on behalf of the support for Senate Bill 296. It seems that long-term care availability is being threatened by Medicaid reimbursements that do not cover actual cost. Facilities are closing that our elders need now and will need in the future. I think this is unacceptable for Montana. So please support Senate Bill 296. Also, Mr. Chair and committee, do I have permission to be excused as I have another meeting to go to?
Go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman, committee members, I'm Darrell Taves, T-O-E-W-S. On the Valley View Nursing Home Board. And I spent many hours sitting in the chairs you sat in 20 years ago, and this room didn't change that much in that time. But what we have for facing now is I'm in support of Senate Bill 296. And somewhat I think I'm at fault for having to even come to this committee, because what we have is, and I voted for people to come and take and represent me, thinking that they had somewhat Montana values. And I've come to realize that the values that we thought were inherently the same 20 years ago aren't there today. And especially when we take a look at cost, we used to, in the education committee and other committees, look at what does it actually cost to provide a service. To this day, we cannot have that discussion in this legislature and with the people in control here. Actual cost is something, that's a starting point. You can't run a business, you can't run anything unless you know actual cost. And we've always been a state that's gone to reality. We said we don't like what we have, we don't like the problem, but we start with reality. This is where we are today. And we can't seemingly have that discussion. What we had for a guide study is very similar to what we have in a real estate business. You go to buy your house, you ask for an appraisal, and the person that's going to do the appraisal, that the seller gets a hold of that appraiser, says, this is what I'm selling for, this is what I need the appraisal to be. And so the appraiser gives them that kind of number. And it can be amazing how close those numbers are when that kind of thing happens. That's the same thing that happened with the study. We had the governor's office give them the numbers they wanted to come up with, and those are the numbers we came up with. Nowhere close to reality of where our costs are. And we talk about caregivers and how the people want to take and stay at home. That's possibly true. That's very true. But the reality is, the people that are coming to our nursing home with tears in their eyes are the caregivers. They've given every emotional thing they can give, every physical amount of effort they can give, and they're out of money. If you're on Medicaid, you're out of money. You're broke. And those are the people that are suffering because they have no other place to turn and nothing else to do with. And what we're looking at right now, we're not anywhere close to what we need to be to get the job done. And so I would just encourage you to support this bill. I know it's just a policy bill. It's not a money bill. But if we can at least get to a place where we can start having an intelligent conversation, it would help. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. With your permission, Mr. Chairman, I do have a handout.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you.
First, Mr. Chairman, I want to give great thanks to the sponsor of this bill. This is so important to Montana, and I really appreciate Senator Beard for bringing it. I'm Margaret MacDonald, capital M-A-C, capital D-O-N-A-L-D. I'm here on behalf of Big Sky 55 Plus. We are an organization of Montanans 55 and older. We work together to make this state a better place for all Montanans and to support the dignity and well-being of our people, young and old. Senate Bill 296 is long overdue and very much needed. As the saying goes, it's never too late to do the right thing. Demographically, Montana is the sixth oldest state in the nation, with 20% of its 1 million people over the age of 65. 50,000 Montanans are over 80. Within 5 years, as the first cohort of baby boomers will reach the age of 80. That is why the loss of 11 skilled nursing facilities in the last year, which is 16% of the nursing homes with 852 beds, many of them having to send their clients hundreds of miles down the road. There is a very clear driver of this alarming development. Our Montana provider rates are so far off the actual costs of providing this care. We can ill afford at this time, with the silver tsunami of we older Montanans coming up faster than you can imagine. That is why this bill helps us to do is to face the future with eyes wide open and ready to do the right thing for our people. It is not realistic or practical to think that everyone can age in place in our homes or apartments. Analysts in senior care and services told our joint subcommittee last week that 70% of older Americans will need access to long-term support services on a whole continuum of care. People over 85 require five times as much help with personal care as those between 65 and 74. We need that whole spectrum of senior services, including the full array of assisted living and skilled nursing homes, as tens of thousands of our Montanans begin to reach those ages. This bill goes directly at that question, recognizing, as it does, that we can ill afford to lose these vital caregivers, as is currently happening. And I would just lift up the handout and point out how many of these facilities are in rural communities, where it's not like there's a competitor down the street that someone can go and go and receive the care that they really can't receive anywhere else. They have to go hundreds of miles from home. So thank you to Senator Beard, and thank you to you for taking this bill up, and I hope you will give it a green light.
Thank you, Ms. McDonald.
Oh, with your permission, I have an appointment. I was wondering if I could be excused.
Okay, go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Claire Marshall, M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L, and I'm here representing the Alzheimer's Association Montana chapter. Residential long-term care is currently at risk, putting our senior Montanans at risk. Aging Montanans built this beautiful state of ours, and we need to give the support, dignity, and care they deserve. Our seniors are ranchers, farmers, teachers, mothers, fathers, grandparents, neighbors, but above all, Montanans, and I ask you to please support them by supporting Senate Bill 296. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman Gilbert, members of the committee, for the record, Dwayne Pressinger, last name spelled P-R-E-S-H-I-N-G-E-R, with the Montana Hospital Association, and we represent hospitals, the full continuum, hospitals, nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and we appreciate our members coming up. Mr. Trost, driving all the way from Billings to present today. We totally support this bill. As Montana ages, having access to the full continuum of care is critical. And by doing this rate adjustment and looking at the cost, make sure that our nursing homes can continue to thrive in Montana. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have a handout, if I may pass it out.
Go ahead.
My handout is my written testimony, just in case I go off script today. And the last part is, the second page is some information I'll talk about at the end of my testimony. My name is Jill Sark. It's spelled S-A-R-K. I'm speaking on behalf of the Montana Healthcare Association. MHCA represents long-term care facilities such as nursing homes, assisted living, and home care agencies. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 296, and I also would like to thank Senator Beard for bringing forward this very important bill. I want to provide some information about Section 10 of the bill. This section directs the department to submit an amendment with the federal government to have community first choice include assisted living facility services in Montana's Medicaid's state plan. Community First Choice, or CFC, as we talk in acronyms, is an option that allows states to provide home and community-based services and supports to eligible Medicaid enrollees under state plan. So if it's state plan, it's an entitlement program, and there's not a wait list. CFC provides a 6% increase in federal matching dollars, or another acronym that we often use is FMAP. Services provided by an assisted living facility are one of the services that are available for states to choose when they develop their CFC plan. to have coverage. And by electing this choice, states are providing Medicaid recipients with another setting option to receive services from Medicaid. The least restrictive option is, of course, in the home. The most restrictive is in a nursing facility. This provides that kind of in-between service for people receiving Medicaid services. Assisted living services are currently provided through the Big Sky Waiver Program, which is not an entitlement program, therefore a wait list. If assisted living services were covered through the CFC program with that additional 6% federal match, the state would realize a general fund savings of over $500,000 even after providing services to all of the people that are on the Big Sky Waiver wait list that are waiting for an assisted living facility. So to clarify, it's not everybody on the wait list, but it's all of those on the wait list that are waiting for an assisted living facility. There's also additional savings when someone is receiving services through Big Sky Waiver. They have case management services, and the CFC program does not require case management services. And I'll go into that a little bit more in depth when I go through my spreadsheet. The change not only saves money, but serves older Montanans currently waiting for this service. So as I said, there's 175 people we know of waiting for services in an assisted living facility. And it's been found that the sooner people can receive services, the less likely they are to end up in a higher cost of service delivery, such as a nursing facility. So to go to the handout, the second page of the handout, on the top line, yellow line, that's current Big Sky Waiver assisted living facility costs. It's $104 a day times 938 people on the program, so $10.5 million. This does not include the costs for case management. If those same people were to move to CFC, the general fund cost would be $8.4 million. But if we assume that everyone on the wait list, the 175 people, also go on the program, that's an additional $6.6 million cost, with $1.5, if you look at the right-hand side, of general fund. So the total general fund with CFC is just barely over $10 million, compared to with Big Sky Waiver at almost $10.6 million, for a savings of $563,000. And then, as I said at the bottom there in the pink, the CFC program does not have the requirement of case management. And the Big Sky Waiver case management costs are currently $11.38 per day for every person on Big Sky Waiver, which would equal $3.8 million. So again, for these reasons of saving money, serving people now when they need it, I urge you to pass Senate Bill 296. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent in the room. Seeing none, we have some proponents online. So the first will go to Jason Kronk from Kalispell.
Jason Kronk, Mr. Chair.
You're muted, Mr. Kronk. You'll have to unmute yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I am Jason Kronk, that's C-R-O-N-K, President and CEO for Emmanuel Lutheran Communities in Kalispell. We serve over 300 older adults on a day-to-day basis. And in our nursing home, we have over 60% of our residents who qualify for Medicaid and are on the Medicaid program. I'm in favor of SB 296, sponsored by Senator Becky Beard, and it has already nearly 50 co-sponsors. This bill accomplishes a proper and well-thought-out funding mechanism that allows long-term care providers and assisted living providers a reasonable Medicaid reimbursement rate year over year based on current market and operating conditions for each provider. It offers a roadmap that is fair and reasonable based on the individual provider's experience, considering the actual cost of providing the services, including the costs associated with the quality and safety standards, inflation, acuity, cost factors unique to specific geographic regions, costs of complying with the regulations, and incentives for improving quality and access to care for difficult-to-place residents. Over the past 18 months under the current Medicaid reimbursement rate, we've had experienced high wage pressures just to keep the staff that we have, as well as try to recruit new staff to fill open positions. We've experienced high inflation with, as an example, raw food costs exceeding 10% for all of 2022 and is forecasted to be over 7% for 2023. The reimbursement methodology that's in this bill would align with quality measures and standards already in place and mandated by the federal level under the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, or CMS. It rewards those providers who demonstrate quality care and services as determined by the annual state and sometimes federal surveys as required by CMS. In short, this bill establishes standards for setting Medicaid rates for both nursing homes and assisted living facilities that aligns with the values and goals of Montanans to have our Montana nursing homes and assisted living operators to do their best for their residents. We've heard of some of the highlights, which include an annual inflation adjustment and regular rebasing of nursing home Medicaid rates. It also provides for a cost analysis every 4 years with rebasing if necessary. It provides that money appropriated, authorized to pay for nursing home services can only be used for that purpose. It also provides that if caseloads are less than anticipated, the funds can be used to increase rates to close the gap between rates and costs and may be used to fund innovation grants to nursing homes. These are some of the comprehensive but long-needed changes to how services provided to our most vulnerable Montanans, those who have no money and cannot care for themselves, are paid for. Montana is the lowest reimbursement, has the lowest reimbursement rates in all of the West. Our current reimbursement rates are at $212 a day under this current year. In comparison, the North Dakota Medicaid reimbursement rate is at $530 a day. This bill eliminates the process we use today to establish provider rates and sets Montana up to have a thorough and well-thought-out, reasonable reimbursement system that aligns with each individual nursing home and assisted living provider's unique operating experience. I ask that you support SB 296 as an essential first step that positions Montana to have a better and fair Medicaid reimbursement system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kronk. For those following online, I just want to encourage you to not repeat testimony that's already been given. Try to keep your comments succinct. I'm not going to limit your time, but if you go on and on, I will. So please try to be succinct. Thanks.
This Mr. would be Chairman Chelsea Kaplan.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. Thank you for having this hearing, and thank you, Senator Beard, for bringing this legislation. I fully support it, and I urge the committees to pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Culpin. Next, we have Zach Brown.
Mr. Chairman, Zach Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Zach Brown, and I'm a Gallatin County Commissioner representing the Fulton County Commission and speaking with gratitude to the committee and also and particularly to Senator Beard for her leadership on this issue. Gallatin County owns the last standing skilled nursing facility in our entire county. We are the second most populated county in Montana after the previous census, and we've had two skilled nursing facilities go out of business in this last year, leaving our facility as the last facility standing. We're licensed for 69 beds under Medicaid, 69 Medicaid beds. in a county with a population of 120,000 individuals. This issue is truly a crisis that deserves the strong leadership that Senator Beard's bill displays. The rate discussions that are happening in House Appropriations and, frankly, the recommendations coming from the governor's office are Band-Aids on a gushing wound. This bill proposes a long-term, sustainable funding solution that will serve Montanans for years to come. I can't emphasize enough that the thinking behind the policy in this bill is truly a leadership opportunity for the legislature to solve a problem that is plaguing our communities, our most vulnerable constituents, and deserves the bold visionary leadership that this policy brings forward. So I thank Senator Beard for her leadership and would urge the committee to get behind this bill and provide leadership where it's sorely lacking. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Next, we have Sean Hill.
Mr. Chairman, Sean Hill.
Mr. Hill, unmute yourself.
Sorry about that. Yep, it just popped up. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sean Hill, S-E-A-N-H-I-L-L. I'm the CEO administrator for Powder River Health, which manages a 41-bed skilled nursing facility in Broadus, Montana. We happen to be the only healthcare facility within 100 miles of our community, and we serve any and all. However, Medicaid residents are extremely tough. We know for a fact, since we turn in a cost report every year, that our average cost on all residential care is approximately $354 a day. Right now, Medicaid reimbursement is $212 a day, and that's if you maintain a 5-star quality rating, which we've managed to do even through the pandemic. That means we're losing $160 a day per resident per day that is afforded Medicaid services. I have only been in this industry, the senior health long-term care industry, for a short time. However, I've never worked in an industry that is expected to work at such a loss that it's non-sustainable. Even with cost shifting, it's just not doable. And hence, that's why we see so many of the long-term care facilities closing their doors, because they just can't do it anymore. And as you've already heard testimony for, it will continue unless we do something long-term to stop it. In support of Senate Bill 296, this provides a template. And it's not just a short-term fix. This is over the long-term. This is a legacy bill that will provide for Medicaid residents and their care for decades to come. I'll close with that, members of the committee. Mr. Chair, I thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Next, we have Michael Coe.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Coe.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. Mr. Chairman, my name is Michael Coe, spelled C-O-E. I strongly support Senate Bill 296. You know, every year the struggle seems to be, every session, is how do we articulate our message to you, our struggle, the things that we have to do to make A equal B. And this bill helps that. It takes the emotion out of it and it becomes something that everyone understands. It's a process. We can look at it. We can dissect it. And we can be fair with each other. And it is historical. You know, I meet people every day that have a real need for healthcare that simply can't be helped. You know, you'll never meet the people who have been married for 75 years and now the husband's got dementia and the wife is barricading herself in her bedroom at night because she's terrified and there's nobody that'll take them and they're on Medicaid. That's a real problem plaguing our state. I ask you to please support this bill. This will be far-reaching. It will touch lives. And it's going to help us get some process and that protects us. And, you know, character is what you do when no one's looking. At the heart of this, all of us know that Montana needs real help. And I thank you for the ability to testify today. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, we have Keith DeVille.
Mr. Chair, I don't have anybody else for...
Okay. Thank you. All right. Do we have any other proponents in the room? Seeing none, do we have any opponents in the room? Seeing none, informational witnesses.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Barb Smith. I'm the administrator of Senior and Long-Term Care Division. I'm here today to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Any other informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee. I have some. I just have to find them. For Mr. Trost.
Chairman McGivney.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm just curious. I know you have a fine facility in Billings. I appreciate the work you guys do there.
Appreciate that.
So I see that on the list that Ms. McDonald handed out, there were 76 beds lost in Red Lodge, 82 in Columbus, and 36 in Hardin, which would be in our geographic area. Did your facility pick up those beds?
We did not.
So can you tell us kind of where those individuals went?
I can only anecdotally share that my understanding is that they were relocated to some of the sister facilities of the ownership groups of those places within Billings and some of the empty beds that they had.
Okay, thank you. I have another question. So chip in if you guys have questions while I'm searching around here. Senator or Vice Chair Lins.
Yeah, I got a question for the sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lins.
So, Senator Beard, the dates beginning July 1st, 2025, where we are looking in Section B at moving forward to provider rate for all of these facilities, is it possible these dates need to be changed? And a follow-up while we're at it, that then... It's going to be every 4 years thereafter, so why is the first one in 2 years, I guess?
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Lins, can you refer to which page? Are you talking about the study rates?
So I noticed, Mr. Chair and Senator Beard, I just happen to be on page 4. It's under each section. Page 4, line 5. Year beginning for the fiscal year beginning July 1st, 2025, the department shall increase rates. And then on line 8, on page 4, for the fiscal year beginning July 1st, 2027, and every 4 years thereafter. So those are the 2 points. It's in each, that thing is, those dates are in each section.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Lins. Would you allow me to re-refer this to an expert who was very integral in putting this together, please?
Yes, you certainly could.
Thank you. Rose Hughes, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Hughes, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lins, there are two sections that do the same thing, one on nursing home and one on assisted living. You happen to be looking at the assisted living one. The dates, I think you asked about the dates. The reason for the July 1 in terms of starting the inflation, July 1 of 2025, starting the inflation factor, that's because the legislature is here. You're going to make a determination of where those rates are going to be for fiscal 24 and 25. So this starts in fiscal 26. It also means you're going to meet before this goes into place. So that's so that's why that was chosen as far as the inflationary adjustment. As far as looking at it every 4 years, the first one is July 1, 2027, because you just did a study in 22. We could have said 26. We picked 27. Again, you will have met. That's a five-year period. But it'll give the state an opportunity. There'll be 5 years between this study and that one. We chose that date. It could have been a different date, but we thought that was appropriate.
Well, okay, so Mr. Chair, if we're aiming for 4 years, wouldn't we be better served? And like, you're correct, I just grabbed a page 4. Wouldn't it be better if the first adjustment would be July 1st of 2025, and we're going to do it every 4 years, would then structurally it be better to have the second date be July 1st, 2029?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lenz, so the July 1, 2025 is for an inflationary adjustment. The July 1, 2027 is for reviewing, for the department to do a review of the costs. Like, they just did a great big review. We're saying if they did it about every 4 years, they wouldn't have to spend $2 million to do it. They could be more up to date. So it's two different things. As you question that date and I look at it, July 1 of 26 might be better, because it would be, because if they looked at the costs then and determined that the rate should be rebased, they could come to the legislature with it. So perhaps if we did it, you know, there might be a better date, but from our standpoint, the July 1, 25 is just an annual inflationary adjustment that starts then, because we feel like we're covered until then by whatever this legislative session does.
Sure. Okay.
So that's annual. And then the other one is for every so many years, look at the costs and determine whether or not the rates need rebasing, and basically bring it to the legislature.
Which, Mr. Chair, you're kind of saying that that's where we're rebasing this time.
You are rebasing this time.
And so that then 2027 would be the logical 4 year. Okay, I'm fine with that. That's
okay.
Good. Ms. Hughes.
Thank you.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the sponsor, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator Weber.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beard, on page 7, there's coordinating language, and on section 12, is House Bill number 110, is that the appropriations for this bill?
Okay, you'll have to forgive me, Mr. Chair and Senator Weber. I've apparently only have my revised copy with notes on it, so I'm just catching up with section 12. And as I try to do that, I would like to just add that to the previous question from Senator Lenz, the 4 years from the effective date of July 1, 2023 would be 2027. And then section 12, the coordination instruction, and I will defer to a validation from the expert witness back here, but I would say that House Bill 110 would have the appropriation that this is based, from which this is based.
And can I refer, Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, Ms. Hughes.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Weber.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Hughes, did you hear the question? I was just wondering about the coordination language here. House Bill 110, is that the appropriation for
Mr.
this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Weber. No, that's not actually not the appropriation. Apparently, House Bill 110 rearranges some of the interim committees, and we have a reference to the Legislative Finance Committee in this bill as far as making a report. And if that bill passes, the report should go to the Health and Human Services Interim Budget Committee. So it's just trying to coordinate, if that bill passes, that we're naming the correct committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I have a question for Mr. Pressinger, please.
Senator McGilvary.
Thank you, sir. And if I understood you correctly, you're representing the Montana Hospital Association?
That's correct.
Okay. I'm just curious about this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the first 20 days of a long-term care stay or a nursing home stay are paid at a Medicaid rate, which is a higher rate, correct?
I think it's the first 60 days are paid at a Medicare rate, right? No. I mean, it's paid the same, but Medicare covers the... Sorry. Senator McGilvary, for someone that's a dual eligible, Medicare covers the first 60 days, I believe. But there's not a different, Medicare has a different rate than Medicaid for nursing home.
Okay. Why I'm driving at here is that it seems like I understand that those first days are much more profitable than after that period when Medicare no longer pays anything and someone would fall off and become on Medicaid. Is that correct?
Senator McGilvary, from my understanding, that's correct, but I would, if we could refer to David Trost.
Okay, Mr. Trost.
Who probably knows from the reimbursement side.
That'd be great. Mr. Trost.
Senator McGilvary, could you repeat the question, please?
Yeah, so the question is, I'm just trying to understand that the first, I don't know if it's the first 20 days or the first 100 days, Medicare's reimbursing a higher rate, and they would fall off and be on Medicaid, which would reimburse at a much lower rate. Is that correct?
If you're referring to the differences between Medicare and Medicaid, yes, for the first 20 days of a Medicare stay, the reimbursement is at a Medicare rate, depending on the person's condition of care. At the 21st day and beyond, Medicaid picks up the Medicaid coinsurance amount for that Medicaid individual. And so there are two separate things. And so the Senate Bill 296 would have no impact on the Medicare reimbursement.
Okay, so the reason I'm asking this question, I'm just wondering if hospitals are building facilities to capture that first, those first days of pay in order to, and that is causing your census on long-term care facilities to go down. That's my question.
Oh, just the opposite, Senator McGilvary. The hospitals are have pretty much all closed their long-term care units or their skilled nursing facility units in the state over the last 15, 20 years. And so they actually, the census that's going down in nursing homes have very little to do about bed capacity. It has everything to do about the capacity of facilities and staffing and being able to take care of them. And so hospitals have the need. I have calls every day from both hospitals in Billings. Can you take our patients? And I have to tell them, I can't. Do you have beds? I do. And I tell them, why can't you take them? Because I have no staff. And so...
I got that. One more question for you. So are censuses also, obviously you're kind of booked, but do you think censuses are going down in long-term care facilities? Is that partly because more people are staying home?
No.
Is that an issue? What's going on there?
No. Well, possibly. I don't have. I can only speak anecdotally. The over the last 25 years since the onset of personal care or assisted living, we have seen a decline in nursing home occupancy across the country. every single year. The occupancy decrease in the last 3 years was primarily driven because of COVID-19. But the occupancy of nursing homes continues to decline year over year over the country, taking out COVID-19 because of personal care as being an alternative, or personal care, home-based community service, and assisted living.
And final question here, I don't want to dominate, but would it be accurate to say that because of that personal home care option being more available to people, that some of the censuses are coming down and that's part of the reason for closures?
I don't see that, Senator McGillivray, I don't see that correlation. The occupancy within assisted livings currently is also challenged. In Billings, Montana, 132-unit assisted living facility recently changed hands because they were not able to staff and continue to provide services. In Red Lodge, there is also another community, another assisted living community that's entertaining the closing as well, and that's an assisted living facility as well.
So in your estimations, the lack of ability to fill beds is primarily as a result of, directly result of reimbursement rates and not being able to pay staff to?
Yes, those two are correlated. The reimbursement rates not able to recruit staff.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Senator Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Ms. Hughes.
Ms. Hughes.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Glenn.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Hughes, can you get us some more information on related to the cost analysis? Can you get us a breakdown of what makes up the cost and then a breakdown of the dollars that make up that cost for the average, the high, and the low?
Mr. Chair, Senator McGillivray, I'll do my best and I maybe will talk to you a little more to make sure I get what you want. I mean, I have a lot of information about costs and spreadsheets, so I can definitely get you some information. I want to make sure I get you precisely what you're looking for.
Thank you.
Ms. Hughes, one more question for you. Ms. Hughes, one more question.
So, no more question. I'm sorry,
so
Mr. Chairman.
This is kind of a follow-up on Senator Weber's question. So I don't have a fiscal note here, and I assume this is going to cost some money. Is there a companion? Is there a connection bill somewhere where this is funded?
Mr. Chairman, I believe the reason that a fiscal note isn't on this bill and isn't required on the bill is because there is no spending anticipated this fiscal year. The only thing in this bill that will cost money would be the inflationary adjustments, and they start July 1, 2025. So the other things we're doing in this bill don't have dollars attached to them. They're more systemic and trying to set a framework to do rates and to do different things.
I see a fiscal note was requested, so thank you, Ms. Hughes.
Yes, indeed.
All right, thank you. We'll wait for that fiscal note. Thank you. All right, any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, the sponsor would like to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. We're talking, you got to face it, we're talking about an invisible population. We all have our own personal stories, our own personal loved ones, our own veterans, our old school teachers, the grocer that we used to visit in the neighborhood grocery store. These are the people who become invisible. And now we're saying that their family members prefer to take care of them at home. Therefore, the population demand on the facilities is going down as well. Yes, we would love to take care of our family members at home. It's not always possible. Full disclosure, I walked in on my 82-year-old mother and my 102 grandmother on July 1st, 2022, in their little home here in Helena. My grandmother had wanted to take a bath, and my 82-year-old mother tried to get her into the bathtub. I walked in to find them both piled up in the bottom of the bathtub, and my mother couldn't get her out. My mother really wanted to take care of my grandmother at home because the cost and the isolation of having to move away was overwhelming. Yes, this is personal for me, and it's personal for so many other people that I met through the summer when I was working with Ms. Hughes and a group here locally, just going through the different details of what's going on in our local area, and then to find out that it's going on across the state, and facility after facility is closing down. Oh yes, we're just going to take care of them all at home because they're invisible and we don't have to deal with it. We need to have our local facilities to take care of those who we cannot take care of at home. This is wearing and tearing on a great number of people. And we have a responsibility in this state to take care of the people who built this state, who contributed, who worked for us, who taught our children. We have a responsibility to take care of the people who took care of us. And instead, we're taking care of people who would rather not work because they're sitting at home dealing with their emotions. We have our priorities upside down, and it is time to take hold of this. Now, we're talking here today with this bill. It is long-term and sustainable. It's a reasonable approach. For year after year of addressing the Medicaid rate that's required to meet the waivers and the copays. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 296 aims to put in place some basic standards, some decencies in how we create an environment in which we can have a stable provider community and assure access to services for those who truly need them, our invisible population. Now, Mr. Chair, there is an amended bill that has been distributed to you, and in that, the amended version addresses personal needs, allowances, and room and board costs, specifically outlined in Section 8 of that amended bill. And yes, a fiscal note has been ordered. It is so we can detail the fiscal minutiae that is related to that to this bill. That fiscal note is forthcoming. So, in the meantime, Mr. Chair, and my fellow committee members, I ask, please do pass on this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Beard. Thank you for a good hearing, all of you who are here today. Let's close the hearing on Senate Bill 296. We'll now open the hearing on Senate Bill 300. Senator McLafferty. Senator McLafferty, would you like to open on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Senator Edie McLafferty, and I represent Senate District 38. That includes Butte, Silver Bow, and Jefferson County. And today I bring you Senate Bill 300, which is an act revising laws related to speech-language pathologists and audiologists, revising qualifications for licensure as a speech language pathology assistant or audiology assistant. Senate Bill 300 revises the law governing speech-language pathology and audiology assistants. Speech and language and audiologist assistants are looking forward to this bill being passed because the current law does not reflect the current licensing requirements. And I'm going to give you a little bit background about this bill and how it came to be. In 2021, the legislature passed House Bill 210, which was a bill that created a pathway to licensure for speech-language pathology and audiology assistants, including both those new to the field and unregistered individuals who worked as aides for speech pathology and audiology assistants. At the time, the bill included requirements for an exam and practicum hours. Because a profession thought an appropriate exam could be found and practicum hours obtained. And we have found out in the last couple of years that that is not the case. The profession could not find an appropriate assistant exam. At this point in time, there is no exam to give, and the only assistant program in Montana, that is at the University of Montana, cannot provide the practicum hours required by House Bill 210 that was passed in 2021. So fast forward to today, and we are here before you to try and fix that. So if you look at your bill, you will notice that on page 1, part 21 through 23, the language is amended to remove the examination requirements to be an assistant. And this needs to be removed because, like I told you, in the last 2 years, the Board of Speech, Language Pathologists, and Audiologists could not find the exam. It also amends the law to remove the clinical practicum and supervised professional experience requirement for the reason that I just stated. Also on page 1, from 25 to 28, the language is changed to reflect the requirements, the level of licensure, and amends the clause allowing unlicensed applicants to have more time to get their education. The date is changed from October 1st, 2021 to January 1st, 2024. Again, on page 2, you'll notice that on part B, that is taken out of the bill and also on line 3, you'll see that some of the language has been removed to reflect about the exam. I'd also like to let you know that the Montana Speech and Hearing Association has come forward to me and asked me to represent or to bring this bill forward for them. With that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I will step aside and listen to the proponents and if hopefully no opponents.
Thank you, Senator. Proponents for Senate Bill 300. Seeing none in the room, looks like we have one online. Shelby Midbow?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Ms. Midbow?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Shelby Midbow. That is M-I-D-B-O-E. And I'm the president and public policy chair for the Montana Speech, Language, and Hearing Association. I'm speaking today to provide you some background information on Senate Bill 300. Thank you to Senator McClafferty for sponsoring this bill and for your introduction. In Montana, we have a shortage of speech language pathologists and audiologists, and I've provided current data about that in my written testimony, which you should have. In order to try and improve the shortage, in 2021, the legislature passed House Bill 210, which created speech-language pathology and audiology assistants and did away with the requirement for the registration of aides. This original bill had some requirements for licensure which are not possible to enforce and which made Montana requirements for licensure higher than the national standard for licensure. Although 30 people have completed the assistant program at the University of Montana, there are 58 certificate-seeking students currently in the program, and there are still no licensed SLPAs or audiology assistants in Montana because of the changes that need to happen for this bill. We support this bill, which revises the licensing laws to remove those requirements and to get people to work to help the clients of Montana. As Senator McClafferty mentioned, we've been working with the Department of Labor and Industry through the Red Tape Reduction Initiative discussions to make changes in new Section 21 of House Bill 152, which refer to SLP and audiology licensing as well. But we needed to run this bill separately in case House Bill 152 does not pass, because we really need to get those assistants to work. The language in House Bill 210 followed the requirements for national certification as a speech pathology or audiology assistant through the American Speech Language Hearing Association, or ASHA. For national certification, assistants need education, clinical practicum hours, and to pass an examination. When House Bill 210 was drafted in 2021, the profession left the language about the examination intentionally vague and did not realize the Department of Labor and Industry would require a psychometrically sound examination. And that was just short-sighted on our research on our part. So at this time, the only psychometrically sound examination available has been created by ASHA, and it's owned by ASHA, not a third party, such as a Praxis examination would be. So despite multiple requests by the Montana Speech Language Hearing Association and discussions with the executive officer of the Montana Board of Speech Pathology and Audiology, ASHA is not allowing Montana or any other state to use their certification examination for state licensure. Upon learning this, the executive officer of the Board of Speech Pathology and Audiology took action to create an RFP so that individuals could bid on the creation of an assistant examination for the state of Montana. The RFP was released twice, but did not receive bids either time. As a result, we're bringing you this bill to remove the examination requirement. In the addition to the requirement for an exam, the language in House Bill 210 also called for clinical practicum hours to be obtained prior to licensure. The University of Montana in Missoula does have an assistant certificate course of study, but clinical practicum hours are not available through that program. Please refer to the informational testimony provided by Dr. Catherine Off, School of Occupational Speech, Language, and Hearing Sciences at the University of Montana for more specific information on that. This bill also removes the requirement for completed practicum hours prior to licensure. Section 2 of this bill, as Senator McClafferty said, changes the start date for licensure application to January 1st of 2024. This date was suggested by the executive officer of the Speech Pathology and Audiology Licensing Board, as she believed that that would be a reasonable time for the board to complete rulemaking and be ready to begin licensing. The shortage of SLPs and audiologists has continued in Montana, but there are people ready to become licensed as assistants that can get to work quickly once this bill passes and licensure is available. This bill will put Montana speech pathology and audiology assistant licensure requirements in line with other states nationally. This bill will impact Montana positively, and I ask for a due pass on this bill. Thank you for your consideration of this testimony, and I stand for your questions.
Thank you. Any other proponents in the room? Seeing none. Any opponents in the room? Seeing none. Any informational witnesses?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Eric Strauss. That's S-T-R-A-U-S-S. I'm the administrator for the Employment Standards Division in the Department of Labor and Industry. And based on Mrs. Midbow's testimony, I don't think I need to be here, but I'll be happy to answer questions if you need them. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Robin Turner, R-O-B-I-N-T-U-R-N-E-R. I am the lobbyist for the Montana Speech Hearing Association. I'm only here to hand in that informational testimony Ms. Midmo referred to.
Great. Please hand that out. Thank you. Okay. Any other informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee? I see none. Pretty straightforward. Thank you. Senator McClafferty, would you like to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I ask you for a due pass to help make it possible for speech-language pathologists and audiologists gain their license, and this will help with the shortage that we have throughout the state of Montana.
Thank you, Senator, very much. Okay, this closes the hearing on Senate Bill 300. Members of the committee, I just want to give you a little heads up here. We'll take a short break, but I want to give you information that we'll do executive action today on House Bill 286, and then SR 15 and SR 50. I was going to do some other executive action, but there's amendments that are coming, and Senator Gross is not here, so I'm not going to do action on her bill. So we'll wait on that. So again, House Bill 286, SR 15, and SR 50. We'll stand at ease for about 5 minutes and then come back.
working your way through it.
Okay, public health will come back to order. We'll just take these bills in this order. We'll do SR 15, then HB 286, and then SR 50. Mr. Vice Chair,
I move to amend Resolution 15.
Move the bill first.
Move the whole bill first? Okay. Mr. Chair, I move SR 15 do pass, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Linz has moved the bill. I think that as we heard the hearing yesterday with Mr. Beckstrom, I didn't sense any energy in the committee to confirm his nomination. So what we're going to do here is Mr. Vice Chair is going to do an amendment to this bill, and we're going to just take him out. So, Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move to amend Senate Resolution 15 to strike Nicholas Beckstrom, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Maddie has the amendment.
Thank you.
So, members of the committee, this simply strikes Mr. Beckstrom from SR 15. And with this amendment, we will advance the SR 15 to the floor with his name stricken. And so any discussion on the amendment? Question's been called. I think we can do a voice vote here. Okay, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. Proxies.
Mr. Chair, Senator Heinbaugh is aye by proxy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kelker is aye by proxy. Senator Gross is aye by proxy.
Okay, motion passes unanimously.
Mr. Chair, I move to concur for Senate Resolution 15 as amended without Mr. Beckstrom's name.
Okay, I think we can take a voice vote on this one also. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Proxy votes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Heinbaugh, aye by proxy.
Senator Gross, aye by proxy. Senator Kelker, aye by proxy.
Okay, motion passes unanimously to move Senate Resolution 15 to the floor as amended.
Mr. Chair, I move to request a separate committee resolution for Nicholas Beckstrom to be considered on by a separate resolution, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members of the committee, those in favor of the vice chair's motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. Proxy votes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Heinbaugh, aye by proxy.
Senator Kelker, aye by proxy. Senator Gross, aye by proxy.
Okay, members of the committee, what we'll do is we'll have an adverse committee report resolution in Monday's executive action for Mr. Beckstrom. Let's move to HB 286.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 286. Do concur.
Okay, members of the committee, this was a pretty simple bill we heard yesterday, or Wednesday rather, just simply allowing HEART funds to be used for youth suicide prevention. Any discussion on this motion from the vice chair? Senator Glimp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Never miss an opportunity to remind us all that the HEART Fund was started in the medical marijuana or the recreational marijuana bill and has no policy associated with a huge program. And I'm hoping that this session, we will come up with some kind of policy to control where those funds go and what that looks like.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I'm in agreement with Senator Glimm. That lack of definition and this bill concept can be part of that discussion, but it needs to be well defined, and I just won't support this right now.
Mr. Chair. I agree that needs to happen, and until then you're going to see lots of bills like this grabbing for the money. Wouldn't you concur?
I think, Mr. Chairman, I'll support this motion. I think this is within the intent of where it needs to go, but I think we need to be having some policy that is pretty like any other policy that we put forward. We don't just dump a lump of money and start a new program. We generally have a real vigorous debate around the policy that would surround a program that we're standing up, and we didn't do that last session. And I requested it numerous times then, and I've requested it numerous times now. I think Section B will probably be putting forth something to do that, because I don't think that the agency has anything coming forward through the process.
Okay. Any other discussion on the bill? Senator Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Lenz, I appreciate what you had just said, and Senator Glimm, I am concerned now, especially in that you have asked several times for some kind of policy standing up this program, and it's not been addressed to date. And it's not, and you're fine with that for now?
No, I'm working. That I would have thought that, Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, I would have thought that that the agency would bring us forward something to try and give us some kind of direction of where this program is going, some kind of guardrails, some kind of policy sideboards for it. But we don't have this. What you see in that bill is exactly all the statute that there is that surrounds the HART Fund. There, we did have a nice presentation in Section B about the HART Fund and the continuum of care, but none of that is in statute. So I think that I've requested it numerous times, both last session and this session. And nothing has been put forward yet to date. So I think Section B will probably be tackling it.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see from my notes that we had the informational witness in here, Carl Rostron, and we didn't ask him about that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beard, Carl Rostron is actually the suicide prevention coordinator specific to suicide for DPHHS. The HART Fund program is much larger than that. Continuum of care from about substance abuse, mental health, from one end to the other, prevention to treatment, crisis, the whole continuum of care. And so they're exactly, it's a very complicated issue, it's got huge depth and breadth, and we don't have statute policy that directs any of that.
Senator Lenz.
Did you need to go, Senator Beard? You can ask another question.
Hopefully you'll take it.
Well, yeah, that was one of the more startling things in Section B is how illy defined that was. And so I kind of took the position, obviously, use suicide prevention with Senator Glimm's position, not opposed to that at all. But there are a lot of people, I've seen other bills too, that want a piece of this. Well, but then the question is a piece of what? It's not well defined as to where it's going. That money could go anywhere. And the other startling one, just as a side note, was outcomes. We've talked about outcomes for years, and it became evident that outcomes weren't being... That's getting off the bill.
Okay, but we're kind of straying off
Mr.
the course
Beard,
here.
Of Mr.
This bill.
But so I would maintain my... Though I agree with Senator Glimm that it's not a bad concept, I just can't support the bill.
I have one more.
Senator Beard.
Mr. Chair, is this in any way establishing a precedent for how we set direction of funds without statute in place?
Is that a question for Senator Glimm?
Yes, I would think so. Senator Glimm.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beard, I guess I could, I can see that point, and I guess I would, I'll change my support, and I'll substitute motion to table, Mr. Chairman.
It's a non-debatable motion. Substitute motion to table. Secretary, take a roll call vote, please.
Senator Lenz?
Aye.
Senator Beard?
Yes.
Senator Glimm?
Yes.
Senator Gross?
No, by proxy.
Senator Heinbaugh?
Aye, by proxy.
Senator Kelker?
No, by proxy.
Senator Molnar? Senator Weber?
No.
Chair McGilvery?
No.
4 members have voted aye, 5 members have voted no.
The motion to table carries. Remember? Oh, it passed? Oh, it failed, sorry. Motion to table failed, so we're back on the bill. Let's take a roll call vote on House Bill 286.
Senator Lenz?
Nay.
Senator Beard?
No.
Senator Glimm? Senator Gross?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Heinbaugh?
Nay, by proxy.
Senator Kelker?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Molnar? Yes. Senator Weber?
Yes.
Chair McGilvery?
Yes.
5 members have voted aye, 4 members have voted no.
Okay, motion carries. Senate Bill 286 will go to the floor. All right, members, we're now going to look at SR 50. Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Resolution 50 to pass.
Discussion on the motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to support Director Barrington to be confirmed as the director of DPHHS. I have worked with him a fair amount over the last few weeks on a fairly everyday basis, and I'm impressed with his leadership, his work ethic, his willingness to work with the legislature. I think that he's a good choice for that department, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion? Senator Weber?
Mr. Chair, I guess we, and I'll have to say that because we've had discussions about him, and it's just the issue of, you know, his being able to hold that job. He has not ever held a position of that at that level, and so that was kind of, for me personally, he needed more experience, and so that's why I'll be voting no.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Senator Weber, that was my thought initially. And when he was working as policy on the governor's office, I was unsure. But for me, he's proven himself as someone who's trying to be in the middle of things, trying to make a difference. And he's made himself quite available to us in Section B and in this committee too, maybe to the point that he didn't need to be, which I've very much appreciated that. He seems to be open to discussions and criticisms, which I've found refreshing. And so I'll be a yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any other discussion? Seeing none, I just want to say this before we take a roll call vote. I have a lot of regard for Mr. Barrington, and I think he's taken the department a direction that I like. The Department of Public Health and Human Services is a department that is there for people that have needs and helps people in difficult and stressful times. But it never has had a mission to take people from dependency to independence. And I don't think it's the role of the state to make perpetual dependence for generations. His mission and his goal is to help people become independent. And I think an individual with that kind of a goal in a department like that, that has my support wholeheartedly. And I find him as one who's extremely passionate about his role, extremely organized. Yes, he's young, but great leaders that emerge in their youth is a great thing. We need more of them. So I'm going to wholeheartedly support his nomination. With that, we'll do a roll call vote.
Senator Lenz?
Aye.
Senator Beard?
Yes.
Senator Glimm?
Yes.
Senator Gross?
No, by proxy.
Senator Heinbaugh?
Aye, by proxy.
Senator Kelker?
No, by proxy.
Senator Molnar?
No.
Senator Weber?
No.
Chair McGilvery?
Yes.
5 members have voted aye. 4 members have voted no.
Okay, SR 50 is passed the committee and will move to the floor. Members, with that, we'll close the hearing for public health. Just a reminder, we'll meet Monday. We have, I think, 5 bills Monday, and we'll do some executive action.